Now, the phone number is 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. KPFT exists because of people just like you. Please call now, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Thank you for your support of independent, community-based Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
Call-ins tonight, except, you know, to take money, because we're in our last show for this period's pledge drive. Next week, I am looking forward to taking phone calls from folks. The goal, and we're gonna do an actual show, okay? So don't let me tune you out here. The goal for this hour is to get five people willing to pledge $5 a month for 12 months. That's my goal for the hour. Five people, $5 a month. That's the deal. Okay, we do have a guest tonight. We're going to have Lane Lewis, and I'm going to wait for him to be online. And we're going to talk about the Texas primaries and what exactly – oh, that changed how things sound. We're going to talk about the Texas primaries, how they work, how the delegates are going to be allocated, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll have him on in a few minutes. I want to mention that tomorrow is the first day of early voting for the Texas primaries. Early voting will run from February 16th tomorrow through, I think it's Saturday, February 26th, and then actual election day is March 1st. Strongly recommend early voting. Go to harrisvotes.com. Harris Votes is one word, harrisvotes.com. And find out where your nearest early voting or most convenient early voting location is. There are just some wonderful aspects to early voting. The lines tend to be short. The times, the hours that are available for most people are manageable at some point. You don't have to worry what precinct you're in. You don't have to worry about where your polling place is. You can go to any early voting location, no matter where you live in Harris County, and they will find you a voting machine with your ballot, and you can vote. And the thing takes minutes. It's great. You know, one of the things that occurred to me was, this was just the other night, you know, we hear again, they're talking about the silent majority, the silent majority. This was a Jerry Falwell thing. Hold on a second. Keep trying. Apparently we're having trouble connecting with Lane Lewis. Well, if we don't get Lane Lewis, that would be a shame, but, you know, the show will go on, and maybe we'll just get him a little later. During the 1960s and 70s, Jerry Falwell and others, I think Jerry Falwell coined the term, the silent majority, meaning the essentially conservative people in this country who wanted government to be a certain way, wanted the country to be a certain way, but for whatever reason didn't speak up. This was a time of a lot of leftist protest and agitation, some of it extreme. And, you know, they're now starting to talk about the silent majority again. And here's my thought on the silent majority. The silent majority is Democrats. The silent majority. Oh, I should actually say, if you want to give us money, I haven't mentioned the phone number, 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. People are standing by in Pledge Central to take your pledge. I'm looking for five people to pledge $5 a month. That's my goal. The silent majority, when they have done polling, and this has been the case for years, the largest single group self-declares as Democratic or Democrat-leaning. So I think it's something like 38 or 42% of people polled say that they consider themselves Democrats or lean toward Democrats. I think it's something like 35% of people polled say that they lean toward Republican, and the rest say they're unaffiliated or independent. So the true silent majority, or plurality, if you will, is Democrats, because they are less likely to go to the polls except in presidential years. Turnout, high turnout, always favors Democrats. This is why, to get back to my original topic, this is why early voting, going to early voting, the most convenient form of voting with the least potential problems, early voting is absolutely essential, particularly if you're a progressive, a liberal, a Democrat. It's important that you show up. Now, this is not a general election. These are primaries. The primary you're hearing about is whether or not Hillary is going to be the nominee for the party for president, or whether Bernie is going to be the nominee for president. But you know what? There's a whole down ballot of judges and clerks and dog catchers, if you will, metaphorical dog catchers. So here is what I suggest about early voting. First of all, Harris County is easy. You go to harrisvotes.com. You can put in your address or your name or both. You can actually see what your ballot covers from where you live. And you will see all the different positions that you have to express a preference for. It's very, very hard. I'm sure most of you out there already pretty much know whether you favor Hillary or Bernie. Many of you may actually not make up your mind until you're actually confronting the ballot. That's fine. If you want to know who you prefer for what they call the down ballot races, here's what I suggest. As a liberal, I suggest that you look for any endorsements from newspapers like The Chronicle, which tends to be a right-of-center newspaper, but not a crazy right newspaper. You can go to, I actually like to go to the caucus.com, which is the GLBT caucus. You can go to AFL-CIO if you want to see what the unions are feeling. You can check other newspapers around the state. So there are many ways that you can see what their endorsements are. And if you find sources that you feel are attuned to your general philosophy, ideology, belief, that gives you an idea how to vote in the down ballot races. Of course, you can do the personal research. You can go to each candidate's website and see how they feel. And I certainly don't discourage people from doing that. But it becomes really tough. Really tough. You can talk to people that you trust and see how they feel about it. There are a lot of different ways of deciding who you're going to vote for on the ballot. So, harrisvotes.com. If you're out of Harris County, you can go to the Texas Secretary of State and find out where you can get voting information for your particular county. It's not that hard. Next week, when we're taking phone calls, if there are questions, we'll still have a week of early voting to go. And if you have questions, I'll see if I can't answer them at the time, I will see if I can answer them on my blog. Voting is important. That's why I'm now dedicating essentially the first 8 minutes of the show. It appears that we are not being able to get Lane Lewis I am rather disappointed. We'll have to keep trying. Maybe we'll get pleasantly surprised. Lane, if you're listening to the show, if you have Egberto's phone number, give him a call and let us know how to contact you. I'm sorry? Okay, Egberto has texted him or texted you. Give us a call. Give Egberto a call. Call and pledge Central if necessary. They can pass a message, and let's figure out how we can contact you. And I hope everything is okay, because I know we had worked this out over some period of time, so I hope that everything is okay. Okay, going on. Again, voting, an important thing. If you are not registered to vote, it is too late to register for the primary. It is not too late to register for runoffs or for the general election. Do make sure you are registered to vote. Go to the Secretary of State website or harrisvotes.com or whatever your local county's county clerk has as a website for voting. Make sure you're registered. If you are not, make sure you do register. Make sure you have the proper ID. Don't be excluded because someone has passed a law that says you have to have a specific ID. If you don't have the necessary ID, make sure you get it. Well, we were going to talk about how the Texas primary allocates delegates. And unfortunately, that was the job I had figured Lane would help us with. So I don't have that information. What I have learned is that we no longer have what they used to call, idiomatically, the Texas two-step. So the choice of delegates is not partly allocated by the primary vote and partly allocated by caucuses on election day night. That process has changed. I wish I could tell you precisely how it has changed, but I haven't fully read the article because I thought Lane was going to do that. I believe that the way it's going to work now is the primary chooses who gets the most delegates, apportions the delegates. The various senatorial conventions, so for example, I'm in the 15th senatorial district, so if you have a senatorial district convention, that is where the people that will be the physical delegates are actually chosen, the folks who are going to go to the state Democratic convention. And then at the state Democratic convention, from among those people, they choose who the delegates will be to represent Texas at the national Democratic convention. I'm not sure what the process is for the Republican side. I think it's somewhat similar. But, you know, each party decides how they're going to do this stuff. This is not regulated by the state. Okay, enough about voting. I think I've dedicated, you know, almost a quarter of the show to that, so I think I've done my civic duty. We are looking for you to help support KPFT and ThinkWing Radio and keep both of us on the air. KPFT is a volunteer station. Almost everybody here works for no money. I don't get paid. Egberto doesn't get paid. Almost all of the show hosts don't get paid. Some of the technical assistants don't get paid. And the people that do get paid are underpaid. Even with all of that, it costs $150 an hour just to keep the station on the air. We're a 501c3 organization, which means that if you itemize your taxes, you get a tax deduction. I like to joke that the more you give, the more you save. It's kind of so. You get to feel good, too, because you're keeping the only true community listener-supported station in Houston on the air. The amazing thing about KPFT is that this one station has, Egberto, is it over 100 or almost 100 different shows?
Over 100.
We have over 100 unique show titles broadcasting every week. Some of those show titles broadcast 5 days a week, but I'm only counting them as a title, one title. So we have roughly 100 show titles every week. Now, think about the other stations in Houston. How many of those stations have such diversity of ideas and opinions and information and music. How many of those stations have that kind of diversity all in one radio station? I think the answer is none. How many stations have probably, what, 80% of that programming or more generated here in Houston from people in Houston? I think none, except for KPFT. We are a community resource, but we only exist if you help us. 713-526-5738. We welcome any pledge, any donation. My personal goal is to find five people willing to pledge $5 a month. That's my personal goal. But we'll take lump sums. That's okay, too. $40, $60, $150. We do have, at some levels, we do have thank you gifts. Or you can decline the thank you gift, which makes your pledge go further. Also, there is a promotion currently. One of our members has pledged up to a certain number of folks, and we haven't reached that number of folks. If you are a first-time pledge, if you have never supported KPFT before, this person will donate an additional $10 to your pledge. So your pledge goes a little bit further. Five folks, $5 a week. Be a new member, get an extra $10 added to your pledge, and you can help support KPFT 90.1 FM. KPFT.org is another place you can donate or pledge. KPFT.org, there is a link there for supporting the station. You can choose what show you're supporting. I hope it'll be this one. But it all goes into the same pot, basically. But it's nice to know that people love you, you know. So KPFT.org or call 713-526-5738 and help us out. Okay, the other elephant in the room, as it were. We have an opening on the Supreme Court. Both parties at the national level make an issue of how important it is to control the appointments on the Supreme Court. The Democrats obviously would like to appoint more progressive judges, and the Republicans, of course, would like to appoint more Antonin Scalias. So we now have what could evolve into a constitutional crisis. The Constitution is fairly clear. It says that if there is an opening on the Supreme Court, the president shall nominate somebody and the Senate shall advise and consent. It doesn't say anything about in the last year of the presidency, he doesn't appoint judges. It doesn't say anything about a so-called Thurmond rule, where in the last 6 months of a presidency, the president doesn't appoint Supreme Court justices. They wait for the next election. All of that is nonsense. From the Republican side, all of those excuses for not wanting to deal with an Obama nominee during this last 11 months of his presidency, all of that is baloney. Okay? There is nothing in the Constitution that says, oh, no, we shouldn't look. Now, before the show, somebody posed a very interesting question that Egberto and I were having a serious discussion about. Is there any way to force McConnell's Senate to consider a nominee from President Obama? I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think I can sum it up by saying that Egberto's opinion is no, there is nothing that Obama can do. There is no way he can sue. That the Constitution is clear and the separation of powers are clear, that there is no way that Obama can force the Senate to consider his nominee. I, as a layperson, am of the opinion that as a country, we have a judicial system where people can sue over anything. Now, the court may feel the suit is frivolous, or the court may feel the person suing doesn't have standing to bring the action. There are all kinds of reasons that a court might dismiss a suit. But you can bring a suit about pretty much anything. Now, my speculation, first of all, I guess my thought was, could the president go to the Senate parliamentarian and see if there are rules in the Senate that might force the Senate to consider his nominee. Now, we're not talking about forcing them to approve the nominee. That becomes a different political issue. We're talking about whether the Senate, which is at present ruled by Mitch McConnell, whether the Senate can simply refuse to consider a Supreme Court nominee and whether there is any way to force them to at least consider or pretend to consider a Supreme Court nominee. My feeling, and it's just a gut feeling, not being a lawyer, not being a constitutionalist, my feeling is that theoretically, the president could bring an action to the Supreme Court based on the Constitution, which says simply that the president nominates and the Senate advises in consent, possibly looking at other parts of the Constitution that say that law delayed or justice delayed is justice denied, and that the Senate has an obligation under the Constitution to timely evaluate his nominee. And of course, once you have the nominee hearing going, then you've got all kinds of other political pressures and issues that start to get involved. I don't know. I think it's kind of irrelevant because it's unlikely that Obama would bring a suit against the Supreme Court. Against the Senate. It would be interesting if somebody else with standing could bring that suit. For example, a nominee would have standing to bring that suit, potentially. It all gets very potentially messy. And of course, in a lot of these directions, constitutional crises lurk, which is another reason why a lot of politicians don't want to push some of these issues, because they really don't want them decided. Decided is tough. So, are we going to get a nominee under the Obama administration? And if not, will there be a Democratic president after Obama? And here's something that has been tossed around in the news. If this nomination ends up going to the next president, and if the next president is a Democrat, that actually opens the door for Barack Obama to be nominated to the Supreme Court. He has qualifications. First of all, you don't have to be a judge to be nominated. It's kind of like Speaker of the House doesn't have to be a member of the House. To be on the Supreme Court, you just have to be nominated and approved. You don't have to actually be a judge or even a lawyer, technically. However, Barack Obama would have the credentials to be a reasonable nominee. It would not be the first time that an ex-president ended up on the Supreme Court. I think that Grover Cleveland ended up on the Supreme Court. I think that, I'm not sure, did Herbert Hoover end up on the Supreme Court? He doesn't know. But it's happened a couple of times within the last 100 years. Now, that would be a kick in the head, wouldn't it? If Barack Obama ended up being on the Supreme Court as a young man, 50-ish, 20, 30, 40 years as a Supreme Court judge, oh man, that would just be so fun. And then there are the conspiracy theories that are winding around Scalia's death. There are conservatives asking the question, how could a 79-year-old man suddenly drop dead? I think the answer to that, first of all, is, well, he was a 79-year-old man, and younger people do drop dead. Scalia looked to be a healthy man, but there are some reports that he actually did have some chronic conditions. Let's see, I had something here. All right, Scalia's physician was Brian Monahan, a U.S. Navy Rear Admiral and attending physician for the U.S. Congress and Supreme Court. He did decline to comment on the phone. I did see, maybe not in this particular article, that he was suffering from several chronic conditions. No more information than that. Don't know to what extent they may have been potentially life-threatening. But, I mean, he's a 79-year-old man, and 79-year-old men, even apparently healthy ones, even people in much better physical condition than Scalia appeared to be in, these people sometimes do drop dead. One of the interesting points here is you have a lot of people insisting not only that Scalia be autopsied, but that he be double autopsied. In other words, they're not even going to trust the first autopsy. They want to make sure the two autopsies come to the same conclusion. But here's an interesting piece of information. The manager of the El Paso funeral home that handled Scalia's body said Scalia's family insisted against an autopsy. That decision has spawned a host of conspiracy theories online, as well as skeptical questions from law enforcement experts. Now, there are faiths, as well as families, that just don't like the idea of their loved one being cut up for an autopsy. An autopsy is an ugly thing. You know, if you've watched criminal procedurals, the way they do it, as gross as it is really just the beginning. Autopsies are messy things. And for people who feel that their loved one's body is an inviolate representation of the person they were, I mean, consider how hard it is to get people to donate organs. It's almost as hard in some cases to get families to agree to an autopsy, particularly when the law doesn't require it. Essentially, the autopsy would just be to satisfy conspiracy theorists, and for the family, that may not be a compelling reason. So, a lot of questions are being asked. Now, I'm sure a lot of these questions will be answered, as they say, in the fullness of time. There will probably be, there will certainly be a death certificate. The death certificate will describe some of the reasons why Scalia suddenly died, possibly with a description of symptoms explaining why they reached that conclusion, even absent an autopsy. All of this is really interesting. The Republicans stepped on it instantly, saying, I mean, when I say instantly, I'm talking about like within minutes of the news of his death, within minutes. They had already said, we're not even going to look at any nominees from Barack Obama. It's kind of interesting that the guy who actually had to give sort of an obituary speech for Antonin Scalia was Barack Obama. That the first thing the Republicans thought of was not, oh my God, Scalia died. How horrible. He was such a great man, a great conservative, a constitutionalist, a defender of the law. No, that isn't what the Republicans were saying first thing out of the box. The Republicans were saying, we're not going to even consider a judicial nominee from Barack Obama. Up, we have Bob here. Bob, you got some news?
Hey, yeah, this is Bob Gartner. You know, I just seem to be here all the time. I guess I should apologize to the listeners for that.
We're happy to have you.
It is. And I'm in the room here with Mike and Egberto to thank Greg for calling in a generous donation tonight.
Thank you, Greg.
And I believe he has... the answer, apparently you posed a question.
Okay.
About whether there had been a president who served on the Supreme Court, and he said yes, that is William Howard Taft.
So Taft!
Please give this program a few more donations. Allow me
Thank
to
you,
step
Greg.
Back into Pledge Central and pick up your phone and dial 713-526-5738. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Yes, 713-526-5738. We do love lump sum contributions, but my personal goal is very modest. Total of five people pledging $5 a month for at least a year. Five people, $5. We do have a matching offer out there. If you are a first-time supporter of KPFT, this person will contribute an additional $10 on top of your pledge, whatever your pledge is. I don't think that there's a minimum amount. You make a pledge to KPFT, first-time donor, your pledge will be matched with an extra $10. 713-526-5738. Make sure that you mention the match. It does help us in terms of our record keeping because sometimes people overlook. You can also go to kpft.org, and you can pledge your support there. We are the only fully community-supported radio station in Houston. We are the only fully local, with the exception of a few programs like Democracy Now! And Tom Hartman, we are pretty much the only fully local radio station where all of our programming, our 100-plus individual programs, are generated by local talent or, you know, semi-talent, depending on your point of view. 713-526-5738. We have about 100 unique show titles. Now, if a show title runs 5 days a week, that's only one title. We do have some shows that run 5 days a week. But the total number of unique titles, about 100 shows. Can you imagine? Now, think about this. There are about 200, roughly 200 radio stations in Houston, AM and FM combined. About half of those stations are owned by six companies. We do not have, no city really has true media diversity. What we have is media conglomerates that do very specific programming to very specific targets. You've got corporate control over messaging. You've got corporate control over programming. There are many cities where financially moderately successful progressive radio talk shows have been canceled and replaced with actually less financially successful shows, which shows you that really media concentration does enormous damage to our civic conversation as a community, as a state, as a country. We're not going to sit here at KPFT and by ourselves change the FCC regulations on media concentration, which is really a different discussion for another day. What I can tell you is that KPFT has really, really valuable bandwidth that a lot of media corporations would love to get their hands on. And the only thing stopping them from laying their hands on our bandwidth is you and your support. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. You can also go to kpft.org and donate there, and I hope you'll select Think Wing Radio as the show that you're donating to. And you are listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston, Texas, with my compadre and engineer, Egberto Willis, who is trying really, really hard, I think, to find Lane Lewis. We're not going to find Lane Lewis. Okay. That's too bad. Maybe next week. So, the Scalia conspiracy. Man, that could be a movie. Somebody, Oliver Stone, will make that movie. And whatever it is he makes will only fleetingly deal with anything like facts. Okay, let's move along. You know, last week or the week before, when I was talking about the occupation, the right-wing armed occupation of the National Wildlife Refuge, and I was saying, how do you pronounce the name of that thing? I did a little research since then, and apparently the closest I'm going to get is the, and I think I got to this point in my last discussions, the Malheur, it's French, apparently, French-derived, the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. What I have noticed now that I started thinking about it was when they talk about the standoff, nobody uses the name of the refuge. They all just say the wildlife, National Wildlife Refuge in Harney, was it Harney County in Oregon? So I'm the brave one. I'm using the name. So it's over. There was one fatality, which I would consider, a reasonable person would consider a suicide by cop. Lavoie Finicum, I believe the name is, he basically provoked being shot, which is a suicide by cop. He had made a lot of comments that he thought he would die there, so I think that that was, on some level, his original intent. That was his expectation. There was a lot of discussion about how the feds were handling that occupation, whether it would have been different if the occupiers had been armed black people. I think that's a legitimate question. I think it was legitimate to question how the government handled it. I think that in the end, you could probably argue that they handled it just about right. You can quibble over some details, but the fact is that there was minimal loss of life. There was very little shooting, and except for one person, everybody got out alive, and most of them will face charges. And the wildlife refuge now will be restored as best as possible to its prior state. I think one of the interesting comments that I ran across, you know, in the West, a lot of city folk, like myself, perhaps like you, a lot of city folk don't understand how much resentment there is against the amount of federal-owned land west of the Mississippi. The federal government owns a lot of land, and it was part of the condition of statehood. When these states applied for statehood, part of the condition was that certain portions of their state would be federally owned. Not everybody in the West feels that way, but people involved in ranching, some people involved in commercial development or mineral exploitation, chafe at the amount of land that the federal government makes inaccessible. There's a lot of other federal land, frankly, where they sell the rights to drill or mine or graze, or they lease those rights. So it's not like the federal government puts a fence around all of its land and says, stay off, no commerce, no exploitation. It's really very complicated. But these folks at the Malheur Wildlife Refuge, they do represent, to an extreme, a point of view from a lot of folks in the West. One of the points that were made was if these folks had gone in without guns, if they had gone into the refuge building, if they had staged a protest, if they had had signs, if they had performed a sit-down strike, A, it probably wouldn't have gone on for like 6 weeks because, you know, they're not armed. But I think that they could have engendered a lot more sympathy and made their protests look a lot more legitimate if they had done a peaceful protest rather than coming in armed, saying, we are peaceful demonstrators, but we have guns and we're not afraid to use them. That's a very different thing from coming in with signs, sitting down in the office and going, we think that your policies regarding the public lands are wrong. That might have started a legitimate conversation. But we have gun crazy in this country. The United States has the most guns per capita of any country in the world, and increasingly it's beginning to show. So you're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM, and we are trying to get your support to keep us on the air. My personal goal is to find at least five folks who are willing to donate $5 per month for a year. You can, of course, donate more, but I kind of like the five for five. It's just catchy. And I think it's very affordable. And you can help to keep this community radio station on the air. Almost all volunteer. The paid staff are all underpaid. You know, it's kind of like working for the government. You don't get private market. We actually have a phone call coming in or going out or something. No? There it goes. Disappeared. Okay. I keep hoping for Lane. It's like waiting for Godot, you know? Oh, well. One of the other things that came up that I think is kind of interesting is you now have sort of a de facto, this is going 180 degrees. We're totally changing the conversation now. Talking about the Middle East, talking about Syria and Turkey and Russia and the Kurds and ISIS and those folks, that's where we're going now. Apparently, at least in a de facto sense, there is now some kind of a functional alliance going on between Putin's Russia, Assad's Syria, and what they call the YPK, which is essentially the Syrian Kurdish nationalist movement. And apparently the YPK has been taking advantage of Russian air support to take territory from other groups, including ISIS. Now, here's the interesting thing. I think that there is something like 50 million Kurds in that region. They're apportioned variously in southeastern Turkey, northern Syria, northern Iraq, and western Iran. None of the countries in that area really want a Kurdish state. The only place that actually gives the Kurds an autonomous region is Iraq, and that's because of the chaos that occurred after the overthrow of Saddam Hussein, because essentially they sort of organized themselves better than any other province. Now, Turkey is a NATO ally. Because Turkey is a NATO ally, even though the United States has given a lot of support, for example, to the Iraqi Kurds, and a lot, of course, it goes through the Iraqi government, but, you know, that's just kind of a smokescreen. They've given a lot of support to the Iraqi Kurds, and, of course, the Iraqi Kurds support the Syrian Kurds. And Turkey, of course, is more concerned about the Kurds than ISIS, and, in fact, in some ways has helped ISIS to the extent that ISIS also impacts negatively the Kurds in Syria and Iraq. Do we have the man? Lane, are you there? We're trying. We're almost there. But it's still there. Lane?
I can hear you.
Oh, Mazel Tov. Oh, man. Okay. Welcome, Lane Lewis, to Think Wing Radio. Lane Lewis is the current chair of the Harris County Democratic Party. And we want to discuss the primaries that are now going on. The early voting starts tomorrow for 2 weeks. Then on March 1st, we have an actual election day. And what I was hoping, Lane, that you could help us with is describing what's at stake in the primaries, because it isn't just the presidential nomination. There's an enormous down ballot. So what's at stake with the primaries? How does the voting work? How will the delegates be allocated? And how will they ultimately be chosen at the senatorial and state conventions?
Well, that is a lot of questions. Let me see what I can cover for you, Mike. First of all, thank you so much for what you do. You run a great program, and you have for a long, long time. So the city of Houston owes you some gratitude for that. First of all, yes, most attention falls around the presidential race. But this is what I tell people. You know, we've got the DA's race. We've got multiple judges, et cetera. I tell people, when they think about who they're going in to vote for, think about where that individual would be sitting. Where is their desk going to be if they are elected? And the closer their desk is to your front door, the more of a direct impact they're going to have on your daily life. Now, president and governor are very important, but I can assure you that the district attorney and family court judges and criminal court judges are going to have a significant more direct impact on your life on a daily basis.
That's an overlooked reality, frankly.
Yes. And we need to, you know, people need to remember that. Now, obviously the star of the show is going to be the showdown between Bernie and Hillary, unless you're going to vote for Star-Lord or whatever that person's name is.
Yeah, there are other people on the ballot.
Yes, and one of them is literally, I believe, called Star-Lord, I think, or something of that nature, and I'm not exaggerating much. So what's going to happen is if you want to be a delegate to the national convention, then you're going to need to go to your Senate convention. Now, a lot of your viewers are probably accustomed to going to their precinct caucuses after the polls close. That no longer exists. Precinct caucuses, the night of the election, no longer exist.
So if you early vote, you don't have to worry about showing up again election night. And if you're going to vote on election day, you don't have to worry about hanging around for election night. It's now just a normal election day.
Correct. 100% correct. So what people are going to do instead is they're going to go to their Senate convention. Now, their Senate convention is all going to take place on one night, which I believe is the 19th. You can go to harrisdemocrats.com, and that's Democrats with an S, because there are more than one of us here in Harris County. harrisdemocrats.com, and there's all sorts of information on the button there. But you'll go to your Senate convention, and if you need to know what Senate convention you need to go to, you can look it up on the tax assessor's website, It'll say look up a voter, and you just type in your address, and it'll pull your name up, and it'll tell you what Senate district you live in. Then you go to harrisdemocrats.com and look up where your Senate district is going to be meeting. So then you show up around 8 or 8:30 that morning, and you'll get signed in. And usually those gavels come down, the opening gavel comes down about 9 o'clock. Now, Republican and Democrats alike will be meeting on the same day at different locations, obviously. And the first thing that your Senate convention is going to do is they're going to hold precinct caucuses. So that's when that will happen, at your Senate convention. So when you go into these precinct caucuses, typically your precinct chair will be the chair of the caucus. Now, if he or she is not there, then someone else will pick up the packet and run the caucus. And really the only thing the caucus is doing is identifying the people that are there that want to go to state. And it has to be, I believe, 50-50 male and female. And so if a precinct has two delegates and there's three people there, then and there's only one guy, well, the guy's going to get to go, and then there's going to have to be an election for the two girls.
I want to point out, I've been to these conventions, and very often there are more slots for delegates from a precinct than there are people to fill them.
Yes.
And I want to point out, if you want to be involved in this process, and if you want to go to the state convention, which I think is where, in San Antonio this time?
It is.
If you want to go to that state convention, if you go to the senatorial convention and go to your precinct caucus, there is a really fair, better than fair chance that you will have an opportunity to be nominated as a delegate to the state convention.
That's correct. In fact, there's even a better than better chance, and here's why. Because there are no more alternate delegates.
Really?
If there are no more alternate delegates. What they did was they figured out how many, basically they figured out how many people the stadium would hold in San Antonio. Then they began allocating across the state to the various precincts based on that information. So you don't get used to, if you got two delegates and you got two alternates and four people would go to state. Now you just get four delegates. Everybody goes.
Huh. Is there any kind of alternate that if someone can't go can be pulled and to go to the convention? In other words, four delegates, you don't get eight people going, but there are four people that can sort of be on call.
That would have to be up to the state party, and I don't believe so. I think the whole reason they're getting rid of the alternate is to sidestep all that work.
Huh.
If you're a delegate, you're a delegate, and you need to go.
Okay.
If you say you're going to go. Now, when you but let's say, for example, your precinct gets four delegates and you're the odd man out, you're number five, and you don't get chosen. Well, then what you will do is, when your precinct caucus is over, you will go to your Senate district chair or some designee therein and ask for an at-large form. And they'll give you a piece of paper that you're saying you would like to be an at-large delegate. And each Senate district has X number of at-large delegates that they get to select.
In addition to their specified delegates.
Correct.
Huh.
Correct. And again, it needs to be 50-50. I'm almost positive it's 50-50 male-female. And but then when it gets tricky is depending on how many Bernie votes he gets in the county and how many Hillary votes she gets in the county will dictate how many Hillary and Bernie people the Senate district has to send. So when you get there that morning and you sign in, you're going to have to say, I'm for Bernie, or I'm from Hillary, or I'm... Actually, you can even say I'm from Martin O'Malley still, if you'd like. Or you can say undecided. You can still say undecided at the Senate convention. You really don't have to pick a flavor until you get to state. But here's the kicker. The kicker is if you end up with, let's say, a Senate district is sending, has 100 delegates, and 60 of them are for Hillary, and 40 of them are for Bernie. But you only have, say, 30 people show up that want to go on behalf of Bernie, and you have 70 people that show up for Hillary. All right, well, you're 10 short on the Bernie side, and you're 10 over on the Hillary side. Those Hillary people get to go to state. They get to go, theoretically, as Bernie delegates.
Which they're committed for the first vote.
What's that?
And then they're committed for the first ballot. Is typically how that works? No?
No. No. And
state
here's
is
why.
Different.
And here's why. Here's why it's different. Typically what happens is when they get to the state convention and you have a nominations committee or a delegate committee, right? And so when you get to state, only those individuals that said they were for Hillary get to vote on Hillary delegates. So in other words, they're not the number of Bernie delegates stays the same. It's not going to change regardless of how many people are getting, because at no time on this on the state floor, as far as I know, is are we going to vote for Hillary or Bernie. All it means is when you get to state, you get to vote on who the Hillary delegates are going to be to the national convention. So it really doesn't matter if more Hillary people go to state than Bernie people, because there's no, they're not voting on each other. And really, to tell you the truth, all of that is actually mute, because what they're doing this year is, I know, right? All of that is actually completely mute. And here's why. Because in the past, if you were on the nominations committee or on the delegate committee, you were a really powerful SOB, right? Because you sat on the committee that chose who these delegates were going to be. They're not doing it that way this year. The presidential campaigns are, one, as far as I know, 100% in control of who those delegates are. So the delegate committee is really just going to be a rubber stamp for the presidential campaigns.
So given that process, how do they decide which people? I mean, we're talking about, in many cases, there will be some activists who will be going to the convention, but a lot of them won't be like dedicated dyed-in-the-wool activists. Many of them will be, in some cases, first-time participants. So if you have the Hillary people and the Bernie people deciding who the delegates are, what are the chances that, you know, one of these not dyed-in-the-wool dedicated people might end up having a chance to go to the national, or to state, rather?
The I lost you there on that last sentence. I couldn't hear you.
It was a very long sentence.
Yeah, well, I only lost the last half of it. The delegates don't, you know, regardless of how passionate you are about Hillary or Bernie, the campaign, in other words, if you want to be a Hillary delegate, you know, Gary Morrow is in charge of that. So, you know, they're going to get a list. If they've got 400 delegates that they get to choose from, then that campaign's going to sit down and look at the 1,000 people that are there saying they want to go as a Hillary delegate, and they're going to decide. And then they're going to present it to the delegate committee. And as far as I know, the delegate committee does not get a vote. Not really. Mm-hmm. Hillary's campaign is going to choose who those delegates are going to be, and the Bernie camp are going to choose who they want their delegates to be based on those individuals that made it to state through the Senate convention process.
Now,
that make sense?
It's kind of, sort of. Now, one of the things I want to point out here is the convention has nothing to do with the down-ballot primaries. The convention,
correct,
as I understand it, it's about picking the delegates for the state convention who will represent whichever presidential candidate they're representing. But everything else at the convention has to do with things like Oh, gee. I had the word
resolutions,
later.
For example.
Yeah, resolutions and rules, proposals, and stuff like that. It's a very bureaucratic process. As far as everybody else, though, on the ballot, they either have won their primary or they're going to a runoff.
Correct.
They don't have really much of anything to do with the convention unless they want to just do some glad handing and hi, how are yous.
That is correct, because March 1, you know, is the primary. Early vote starts tomorrow. Go early vote. Then, of course, the Senate conventions aren't until like March 19th. So the primary will be over. And but your listeners do need to know that the state convention is where the state party platform comes. So if you have a particular resolution, if you have something that you are impassioned about, for example, open carry, if that's something that you care about and the Texas Democratic Party platform does not carry an official resolution statement for or against that particular issue, you go to your state, your Senate convention, and you draft resolutions, and you submit those resolutions, and they're voted on,
and then
they're taken to state.
And each precinct has a chance to present resolutions to the resolutions committee, which then decides what the entire senatorial convention will vote on, and then those go to the state convention, where the state delegates will vote on what goes into the final state platform.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I will say to people, if you've never done this, you really owe it to yourselves to do it at least once. Some of it is exciting. Some of it is boring as hell. A lot of it is just the fun of meeting people that agree with you on some things, but maybe think of things in a different way from you, and just the schmoozing and the talking. It's a convention. It's cool. Everybody should do it at least once.
Yes, I agree, especially in a presidential year where, you know, it's going to be a full house. I'm not expecting 2008 numbers, but I do expect it to be higher than usual. And there's two anomalies, and I don't know how to count on them. One of them is an increased turnout of women voters, particularly those that are crossover voters. Individuals that are Republican or independent but cross over to vote for the first, or for theoretically the first female president, highly qualified female president, I might add. It's not just because she's female, but she's highly qualified.
Lane, I have to cut you off here because we are running out of time. I wish we had a little more. Maybe we can talk a little more next week if you have some availability.
Well, the other anomaly, I'm going to sneak it in, the other anomaly is students that haven't voted before that are interested in Bernie Sanders. Those are the two anomalies that I can't count on, that I'm not sure what that turnout's going to be.
It's going to be very interesting. Thanks so much for finally getting in touch with us, Lane. I really appreciate it. We'll talk some more. And thank you for letting us know how this is going to work. You take care.
Thanks, Mike.
And thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we have Bob here. Bob, you have some news for us, or are you just kibitzing?
I wish I had some news. We've been sitting on the phone keeping them nice and warm, but they haven't rung.
713-526-5738.
So, a little dance or sing
yeah,
a
we need
song.
We need to get Bob working.
I can't hear what you're because, saying.
Oh, you can't hear what I'm saying?
You have it fixed so I can't hear him.
Okay. Well, in any case,
713-526-5738, and think about becoming a new member.
Yes.
Buy a membership for your child tonight.
713-526-5738. You're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. And now I think I have to let the automatic cart go, or else I'm going to be cutting into someone's time. Let me just say this, given Scalia's passing, the graveyards, according to Charles de Gaulle, are full of indispensable men. I'll speak to you next week. Take care.
KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston.